there's a lot of hype around AI, and I do think that it is going to take us longer for AI to like really deeply change most areas of work. Like if AI can do our job and our tasks much better than most humans, like what's remaining? Like what is like inherently human, or like what's left? And I hope, right, that our work becomes more strategic versus more execution oriented. And really, you're trying to you know, make the best use of like, okay, where should we direct all of this enormous power towards? And, you know, hopefully that's still a role for us. I could see that world, and I myself would be very happy with that type of world.
Hi, I'm Boaz, founder and CEO of Simply Augmented, and I'm excited that you are tuning in to Shift AI, a show that explores what it takes to thrive and adapt to the changing workplace in the digital age of remote work and AI. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to have Yifan Zhang as our guest. Yifan is the managing director of the AI2 Incubator, a Seattle-based tech incubator that supports top-tier founders creating AI-first startups. If you're someone interested in the way that the AI ecosystem is developing in Seattle, you are not going to want to miss this episode. We also want to send out a special thank you to CIBC Bank, who is the sponsor of this episode. This is going to be a great show, and we are super excited to talk to Yifan today. Can't wait to learn more from her. Let's get to it. All right, Yifan, thank you so much for coming on the Shift AI podcast. I am really, really excited to have you on and chatting with you today.
Thanks so much, Buzz. I'm very excited to be here.
So I want to talk a little bit about your background. It's a really interesting background. You come from the startup world. You're Harvard grad. You started two companies, very successful. Now you're the managing director at AI2 Incubator. And we previously had Oren Etzioni on the show, and we talked a little bit about the incubator, but I want to go much deeper into that today. Will you tell me a little bit about your journey from Harvard to AI2 and the companies that you started? I know you started one in San Francisco and then another in Seattle, but tell the audience a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely not a traditional path. And I think, you know, when I was at Harvard, so I'm an immigrant. I came from China to the US when I was 7. Grew up in Indiana, of all places. Not a lot of other Chinese immigrants. And then went to Harvard undergrad. And I think, you know, when I was in school, I definitely did not even know anything about entrepreneurship. Like, I didn't know it was possible to go out and just start a company. But I fell in with a group that ended up all becoming either entrepreneurs or VCs. So it was the Harvard Entrepreneurship Forum back in the day, the first iteration of many entrepreneurial groups now at Harvard. So I started my first company, Gympact, basically right after graduation. I was 22 when I started that company. I actually, you know, throughout my two startups, I was always a startup CEO and founder. So that was my only work experience until very recently. Gympact was based on actually a paper I wrote my senior year at Harvard around financial incentives, specifically negative incentives, and the ability to motivate really hard behavior change. So it was a fitness app, became one of the top fitness apps back in the day, back in the like 2012, 2015 era. And we were the app that charged you for not exercising and paid you if you did. So we, you know, use financial motivation and, you know, what was new at the time, mobile phones and the ability to track your exercise and verify to really create a incentive system to drive behavior change. It was, you know, now looking back, right, people think, yep, it's a really obvious use case. But I think at the time, it was seen as really crazy and out there. Like mobile phones were new, mobile apps were new. And then the idea of using financial incentives like that, it attracted a lot of attention.
So what happened next?
Yeah. So Gympact, you know, actually did really well. We were backed by Kosla. We moved from Boston to San Francisco and really kind of got to know the ecosystem, right? Like was in the middle of the first cycle of mobile apps and growth in San Francisco, which is very exciting. We received investment from really amazing people like Keith Raboy and Max Levchin. So just, you know, really got to soak in the environment. And then I, after that, took a bit of a sabbatical and traveled and kind of decided that I wanted to do this crazy venture-backed startup thing again. Don't know why. I think sometimes founders are just masochists and like you just can't stay away from that. So I started my second company, Loftium, which is an affordable housing startup. We help people become homeowners by creating part of their home, an income generating, you know, short-term rental as a part of that home so they could save up a down payment and become a homeowner within 3 years. We call it host to own. So that company, I started here in Seattle after traveling for a bit and, you know, living in different cities and deciding Seattle was a really great base to start another company. So yeah, Loftium, you know, raised with DFJ and Norwest. We raised almost $30 million in venture capital and then put together a lot, like almost $100 million in asset-backed debt to be able to actually own real estate across the country. Very different business model than Gympack, which is purely a mobile app. And we sold that company to Flyhomes here in Seattle early last year.
It's so interesting that you were attracted to the entrepreneurial world in Harvard and then, you know, got the bug and did it two times. Was that an influence from growing up? Was your family business people? Were they entrepreneurs? Did you guys talk about business at the dinner table?
No. And I think I may be a rare guest on the podcast where I actually, my parents are both landscape architects. They are not business people. They're not startup people. They grew up in China, right? We all immigrated over to the US in 95. So yeah, I really had no conception of the startup ecosystem or like even that entrepreneur was a job description that you could do until I got introduced to at Harvard.
Yeah. When you were younger though, before you became a CEO, that wasn't your first job. What was your first job where you actually got paid? Were you in Indiana? Did you have a job as a young person?
Yeah. So I probably actually it's very informative. So my first job was at Einstein Bagels. I was 16 years old or just shy of turning 16, actually. So I was not allowed to touch the bagels. My job was to stock the schmear, like the cream cheese, and to clean the bathrooms, which is awful. Like it was like truly a horrible job. I mean, you know, like it was fine. We got bagels at the end of the day. So I got to take home all the uneaten bagels.
That was worth it.
That was the only perk. So that was my very first job. I decided that was not for me. So the summer after that, I actually decided become a tutor. So I did very well on my SATs and I decided, hey, I'm going to actually like go into business for myself and tutor SATs. And that was a much more enjoyable experience than stocking schmear.
Yeah, I bet. And now, before we go further into the interview, I want to take a minute to talk about one of our show's sponsors, CIBC, and their new podcast, CIBC Innovation Banking. As we all know, it's hard to get funding in unpredictable markets, and that's why it's more important than ever to work with trusted partners who have connections beyond cash. On the new season of the CIBC Innovation Banking podcast, experienced venture capitalists and entrepreneurs share the surprising trends they see driving growth in the innovation economy, and tips to obtain funding. Because when it comes to securing funding, people matter more than projections. Whether you're seed stage or late stage, CIBC Innovation Banking helps entrepreneurs and investors grow startups into market leaders. Discover the CIBC Innovation Banking podcast and learn from the innovators of today, the market leaders of tomorrow, and those who fund them. Tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Now back to the episode. Well, I want to hear a little bit about what you're doing now for work. And I'm really excited about what AI2 is doing in general and AI2 Incubator in particular. So can you tell the audience a little bit about AI2, your role, and what you're excited about?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, so AI2 Incubator, I'm sure you've covered some of this with Oren, but AI2 has the research institute side. The incubator is the for-profit side. And we're a standalone entity. We have our fund. We're in fund two. And our goal is really to work with entrepreneurs at the very early stages on AI native companies. We are very different from other incubators. I actually just completed a stint as CEO in residence with the Techstars program here in Seattle with the latest class. I think Techstars, you know, YC are great programs. AI2 incubator is very different. We don't do large batches. We don't do classes or cohorts of companies. We really work directly with a small number of founders at the earliest stages and get really hands-on with them. Our thesis is, right now, there's a lot of out-of-the-box solutions in AI, especially after the launches of ChatGPT. But we think that the out-of-the-box solutions are really only good for like 80%, right, of what is, acceptable to actual customers. So it's really easy to build a dazzling prototype right now. It is very hard to take that prototype to something that's actually usable, like an MVP. So AI2 Incubator is really looking for those use cases where we think we can help a company go from 80% up to 90, 95, whatever acceptability looks like in a startup's time frame. So that's, less than 2 years on a pre-seed or seed.
So we see a lot of these AI wrapper companies. Can you give some examples based on what you've seen of a company that kind of fits that AI wrapper category and then one that is exceeding that 80% that you guys are investing in? I think maybe the audience could use just some clarity on what that looks like.
Definitely, yeah, a little bit more tangible. And I should mention AI2 also invests $500,000 in pre-seed money. So I forgot to mention that part. So I think, if you think about any of the kind of text generation, right, companies out there, so like nowadays, right, it's just so easy to create text in general. So those things are, in our opinion, right, like the out-of-the-box solutions like ChatGPT is already good enough. We don't really see that as a sweet spot for AI2, right, to really be able to help push beyond what's already doable out of the box. So when we think about solutions, maybe an example is we just had a company graduate from the incubator called ChipStack, and they're focused in actual chip design. So the software behind actually testing, right, the chip design process, 80% is not accurate enough for that of software solution, right? It really requires, RAG, fine tuning, all the like various techniques that can be put behind the out of the box solutions to get it into something that actually can go into production, can go into chip designers' hands.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's super interesting. Tell me more about some of the things that you talk with these young startups about in regards to company building. One of the things that I find so interesting about folks like you is you haven't just done it once, you decided to do it twice. And you in particular, you were acquired twice. So that's not an easy thing to do. And you learn a lot along the way. And it can be a slog, and there's a lot of battle scars. And so when you talk to these AI companies, I mean, do you think that there's a huge difference in company building when it comes to AI? Or are you talking to them about how to think about company building in general?
Yeah. So first of all, the caveat is, and we talked about this, it's my second full-time week at AI2. So I have been working with our companies, I have been part-time and working with our companies for a few months now. When I came into AI2, the incubator, I really was trying to see, hey, is building an AI company significantly different, right, than building just a normal startup? Both of my companies were not AI. Loftium had machine learning as part of our business, but obviously everything before LLMs was a different type of AI. But I think when you actually look at the companies, there's obviously a technical component that is very different for AI companies, right? Like for the past decade, I think a lot of what we call technology and technology startups really didn't have much technical risk, right? Like you were building things and like, yes, it took resources and time, but there wasn't a risk in the sense that, a good engineer, right, could build this thing. You really weren't pushing the envelope in those ways. Whereas today, even with the launch of, accessible APIs, There is still a huge amount of technical risk here. So crossing that chasm between prototype and MVP takes expertise. And you, as an investor, really are taking a risk that, like, yes, this chasm can be crossed in a startup's time frame and budget, yeah, right? And it's not some, you know, decade-long research chase. So I think that that is a difference that I've noticed coming into the incubator. Other than that, though, like many of the other things around building a company still stay very much true. So I have talked at the incubator with our companies about what I call the three T's. Really, you know, what investors look for is team, traction, and technology. And depending on your stage, right, whether you're pre-seed or seed, you need to check off one, two, or three of these T's. And it also kind of depends on how hyped, right, the VC cycle is. I think right now, given that VC is you know, much tougher, including in AI, we're encouraging our founders to be able to check off at least two of these T's and ideally, right, make progress on the third T. But you can choose which T's you're checking off, right? Like, say, if you have you know, a team of PhDs, right, from the research side of AI to creating a company, you already have the team and the technology ideally checked. If you are a, you know, young scrappy founder that's like developer just learning, right, how to code rapidly on top of LLMs, you might focus on the traction side, right, versus like a really deep core technology. That's one of the frameworks that we use when we talk to our companies.
Yeah, I like that framework. That's interesting. So what is one of the things that attracted you to AI2 in the first place? I'll tell you, like, when I think about what AI2 and AI2 Incubator is doing for Seattle, I think it's amazing, you know, combined with folks like Madrona, the University of Washington, and, you know, just this ecosystem, Techstars, the ecosystem we have. I really believe that it makes for a really, really interesting ecosystem and city to, you know, elevate a lot of founders. Was it the founders that interested you in AI2 Incubator? Was it the AI, the technology? What was bringing you energy around that decision?
You know, I, before this, had only been the founder. I actually hadn't been thinking about going over to the investor side of the table. But I think I found the incubator model very interesting. So I think there is a lot of room for me as a founder to come in and help the companies and work very directly with the companies versus being a standard, right, investor play where you just chase a deal, select the founders, and then really you're not really getting to spend that much time during the building process. So I really like that incubator process and the fact that AI2 is not a cohort-based program, right? It's not a programmatic type of thing. It's a very custom, like, we think of ourselves as a co-founder light that comes with a $500,000 check, right? So we put in both money and our own time and expertise. And I personally was very attracted to that. I think also the culture was very important to me. The team is extremely low ego. It's a team of mostly AI PhDs. So very like science driven, metrics driven, you know, not ego driven. And then I think the last thing is really the companies. I got to spend a lot of time with the companies. And honestly, I think that's why I got the job is I love spending time with founders. I kind of just do this for fun. After Loftium was acquired, I was throwing these like happy hours just for my founder friends for fun. I, you know, love spending time with the founders. I can't like help myself and really, you know, helping them and working with them. And I think it was very reciprocal, the response to me.
Yeah. It's such a roll up your sleeves approach to investing. And I think a lot of founders appreciate it when they're not just thrown out there and said, you know, go, you know, make it happen, make it work. But to have somebody there along the way really helping you is unique, I think. Don't you agree?
Definitely. Definitely. And it's not a one size fits all approach either, right? Like having that custom hands-on help is very unique. And I think very necessary when you're taking technical risk, like, you know, making AI investments.
So I know that you're also really involved in the community, especially within the city of Seattle. When you had your old company, you were involved with both Mayor Durkin and now You are also in working on a new program for the city. Can you talk a little bit about that effort and how it related to the startup, but also just how it related to your community work?
Definitely. So I got involved with Mayor Durkin's, Innovation Advisory Council. So I was invited to be one of the council members because of my work with Loftium. Loftium was an affordable housing startup. We really focus on workforce housing and homeownership. And I think, I did work with the affordable housing side of the IAC. And it was very eye-opening because, affordable housing in the city sense, right, capital A affordable housing is a very different thing than the for-profit, right, types of prop tech workforce housing. You're talking about, homeless population. You're talking about, people of much lower income levels, and the solutions are very different. So that was eye-opening and really exciting. I think because of my work with the Innovation Advisory Council, it kind of led to me also participating in today's One Civic Partnership, or One Seattle Civic Partnership, with Mayor Harrell. And this was more of a pandemic response where, during the pandemic, right, downtowns really became a very different place than pre-pandemic. In certain cities like Seattle that have a heavier tech focus, return to work was a bit slower. So this effort was really focused on downtown reactivation and the ways that technology companies could participate, right, in driving additional downtown reactivation. It was a very different type of approach and committee, much more informal, right? More ideation, more like trialing different solutions. That was also really exciting to be able to see the city, actually put resources behind that.
And now, before we dive deeper, I want to take a quick moment and tell you a little bit about one of our podcast partners. As a listener of this show, I know you're trying to stay on top of all things AI and tech, which is why you have to check out the amazing GeekWire podcast, produced by GeekWire and hosted by Todd Bishop. It's a treasure of insights featuring industry leaders and the latest tech trends that are shaping our world, and the perfect companion podcast to Shift AI. GeekWire podcast is where technology meets curiosity and covers the world of technology, startups, and geek culture. Expand your tech horizons and join the conversation. Tune into the GeekWire podcast today, a perfect complement to our own discussions here. Don't miss out. Follow the GeekWire podcast on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite listening app. Now back to the episode. Yeah, that's interesting. I think your perspective on cities is interesting. You built a company in San Francisco and then built a company in Seattle. What are your perspectives on the two cities, and what do you think about Seattle's ability to be a place where AI and emerging technologies takes off and becomes a kind of a hotbed for that kind of growth and ecosystem?
Yeah, definitely. So I personally really love living in San Francisco and being in the middle of that, tech and founder-centric ecosystem. But I think my husband and I left because we couldn't see ourselves living there long term. And the attitude in San Francisco is very much, the tech community is very separate from the local community. And many people are so focused on changing the world from a global perspective and a scalable perspective, but not at all focused on the local, programs and issues. Yeah. And that, I think, was not, how I like to think about things. So I actually took a sabbatical and tried living in different cities to see if there was another place that I wanted to live and build a company. And I tried Denver, Chicago, and Seattle. My husband is actually from Tacoma originally, so he was polling very heavily for Seattle. we came here and it just felt really right, right? It had that great mix from a lifestyle perspective, the mix between urban living and nature. And then from a technical perspective, when we came here, it was 2016 that we came here first. And we were still kind of back and forth between San Francisco and Seattle for a while. But I think Seattle has so much tech in its ecosystem, but a lot of it was larger company, right? Like big company tech. So yeah. Amazon, Microsoft, Boeing, and founders and startups was this kind of weird thing. Whereas in San Francisco, it's the opposite. It's like, you know, people will go to Google and say, oh, I'm only going to be here for a year or two, right? Like, I'm not soft. I can still handle a startup. So like the level of respect was very different for being a founder and a startup. But I found that, you know, the raw ingredients was definitely here, right? The tech knowledge, you know, just like the ability, right, for us to build a great company and hire amazing talent. And I think it's only improved since 2016, right? I think obviously the bigger companies have done really well here, but we've also had a number of good, you know, startup successes as well, including like Remitly's IPO, right, from the Techstars program here in Seattle. And now I think with the rise of AI and, you know, Allen Institute of AI, AI2 Incubator, it's really exciting to be here. And my hope is that, you know, we can really build upon the technical advantages of the city, but also like this is a city that really cares about Seattle, about the lifestyle, about like, you know, making it livable, right, for people to stay. And we have our own challenges. Like, obviously, I've been in housing, workforce housing, have seen the impacts here. But I think the difference is that people actually care and are willing to do something about it. And, you know, you're not just looking at the global problem, right? Like, people at dinner tables are talking about the local problems.
Yeah, that's really encouraging to hear. Tell me about some of the people along the way that have been really supportive for you, mentors that have propped you up and helped you along the way.
Yeah. So it's interesting, the term mentor, because I, maybe it's because I've always been a CEO founder. I find the word mentor to be like very uneven or unequal, right, in terms of relationship. Like, the expectation is that one person's always teaching and one person's always learning. And I don't really think that's always been the case, right? I feel like typically a great mentorship relationship is one where both sides are learning. That's just my own thing. But there are many people who have definitely helped me, right, learn much faster. I think just people in Seattle, right? Brent Turner, who's the CEO of Rover, has been amazing. When Lostium, right, was scaling really rapidly, and I was dealing with, you know, levels of scale and hiring and like management I had never seen before. I think he gave me some of the best frameworks that the team all knows, right? We have all these names and frameworks that come from Brent. One of them is called single point of failure. Because I asked Brent, like, okay, so Rover grew really quickly. How did you maintain the startup, right, sense of ownership, even as the team really grew? Gave me the secret, which is that even though the team grew, he continued to have single points of failure within, you know, different projects. And typically, single points of failure are bad, right? Like, you want overlap. But single points of failure also drive a ton of ownership and transparency. And a sense of accomplishment, right? So continuing, even though your ownership level gets smaller as a company gets bigger, continuing to have things where you alone are owning some KPI or owning some initiative was really key to Rover's success. And we brought that with us at Lostium, right? As we grew, we continued to have single points of failure, or we call them SPFs. And there are individuals who are responsible for driving key parts of the business. And that, you know, really was game changing for us as we scaled. I think other people have been very helpful. So Tracy Lawrence is a friend of mine who, again, was always like a couple rounds of funding ahead of us. And she also sold her company, Choose, right before the pandemic, which is great timing because it was a corporate catering business. And she now is an executive coach and is just this wonderful combination and very rare combination of strategy as well as like just deep empathy and human understanding. So I think, you know, that combination makes her an amazing coach, but also just as a friend, there are those moments, where you have to make a decision, and maybe strategy in your heart tell you slightly different things. How do you make that decision as a CEO? She's incredible at helping me think through those.
It's nice to have someone that's a little bit ahead where you can go and talk to them and get some of your questions answered. It can be a lonely experience to be a founder. So it's nice to have those people in your life.
Absolutely.
So I've got one last question for you. And this is a question I ask everybody on the show. If you were to describe the future of work in two words, look into the future, everything that you know about AI and all the innovative companies that you're working with, what would those two words be? And then you can elaborate.
I was thinking about this, and I think I just have one word.
I
think the future of work post AI, right, is going to be strategic. And, I do think AI, there's a lot of hype around AI, and I do think that it is going to take us longer, right, for AI to like really deeply change most areas of work. It's going to start slow and then come all at once, right? But at the end of all that, I've been reflecting on this and thinking about, if AI can do our job and our tasks much better than most humans, what's remaining? What is inherently human, or what's left, right? And I hope, right, that our work becomes more strategic versus more execution oriented. Because I think there is so much of our time that's spent on things that take longer than they should. And we try to automate and optimize as much of it as possible. But, my hope is that, right, 90% of that, maybe 95% of that can be automated away. And really, you're trying to make the best use of where should we direct all of this enormous power towards? Hopefully that's still a role for us. But I could see that world, and I myself would be very happy with that type of world.
Well, I hope you're right. And I am really, really glad that you are one of the leaders in the community that's driving the charge at AI2 and helping entrepreneurs make this happen. It was really, really interesting talking with you, and I really appreciate you being on the Shift AI podcast.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Such a pleasure to have Yifan as our guest on today's episode. Yifan's passion for helping entrepreneurs and her interest in solving local problems with AI-first companies makes her one of the key leaders and researchers in the Seattle area. If you want to learn more about Yifan, you can find her on LinkedIn and Twitter. If you're interested in how she thinks about AI startups, definitely connect with her and keep up with her posts and activities online. I continue to be amazed by the guests we've had on our show, and I'm excited about the ones joining us in the near future. I truly appreciate you spending your time with us. Thank you for listening to this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Shift AI podcast for more exciting interviews, and to the Simply AI weekly newsletter for updates on how AI can help you scale your business. The Shift AI podcast is presented by Simply Augmented and syndicated by GeekWire. We are grateful to have the show sponsored by CIBC Bank. Our theme music was created by Dave Angel.